4 weeks after we buried my husband, I found myself in the back of a carriage, trundling slowly uphill. The road was rough, the carriage ill-built, my black dress heavy, my eyes heavier. I had that kind of tiredness running through me that comes not from lack of sleep, but from lack of rest, lack of calm. My body ached for something new. Beyond the windows, I could see sweeping hills, tall grass swaying in hedged fields, rows of trees and distant apple orchards. We rattled by farmhouses and far-off villages, past great houses set back from the road, then green-brown wilderness for miles, not another carriage or even a labourer in sight. The sun streamed down on rivers and pathways, on dairy fields and scattered trees. This was a quiet part of the world, all mud and sun and sky. I had caught the Great Western Railway from London to Bath the day before, emerged into a busy station in a cloud of steam. I'd stayed overnight in a quiet inn, then taken the post chaise to a town I had never heard of. From there, a carriage was sent to meet me. I had thought at first it must be from the house, but when I inquired after Mrs. Eversham, the driver only scrunched up his nose and said,
"I don't know, ma'am. Never heard of Hartwood Hall before now."
He had been instructive from afar, I supposed. He knew no more about Hartwood Hall than I did, and that was precious little. That the mistress was called Mrs. Eversham, that she, like me, was a widow, that she, unlike me, had a child. Louis Eversham, my new charge, a boy of 10 years old, and that was all. I had met only with an agent in London, a stout woman of around 50 with iron grey hair. The study in her house in Cheapside was grey too, with dull-coloured furniture and cushionless chairs, a huge ledger adorning the pedestal desk. "And you have been at several places, I see," she'd asked, surveying my references.
"Yes."
"You are 29?
"Yes."
"This last character is from 3 years ago."
I swallowed. Another mark against me.
"I have been married, ma'am."
She glanced up, taking in my black dress, my widow's cap, with a quick nod.
"A recent loss?"
I hesitated. If I told her how recent, she would think ill of me at once.
"A little while ago," I said slowly.
That seemed to satisfy her.
"You play the pianoforte, of course?"
"Yes."
"French, German, Latin?"
"Proficient in all, ma'am."
"You can teach mathematics and the sciences as well as reading and writing?"
"Certainly."
She glanced back down at her desk. "I see you have some trouble hearing."
"None that has ever caused me difficulty, ma'am," I said at once. "I cannot hear in my left ear, but my right is very good. You will see, I think, that my former mistress mentions it only to note how little it affected my abilities." Once more she nodded, and I shifted uneasily in my chair. I needed work. I needed something. I had lost positions before because of my bad ear. Some mistresses caught word my hearing wasn't perfect and decided another woman would be more suitable for their child.
"That won't be a problem," she said. "I believe I may have something for you, Mrs. Lennox."
I breathed out. Here was salvation. A life to build. A fresh start.
That was a week ago. Characters from my previous employers had been sent, letters had been exchanged, and finally I was engaged. And now I was sitting in this carriage, heading towards my new life. It felt as though I had never been anything but a governess, as though it had been only a few weeks since I left my last place. 3 years of my life vanished into thin air. 3 years of my life and nothing but widow's weeds to show for it. I thought of Richard. His dark eyes, his freckled face, his gaunt figure those last few weeks. I shut my eyes tight. Beyond the carriage windows, the weather was turning. The sky had darkened from blue to mottled grey. I reached into my skirt pocket for my watch, well, Richard's watch, though it was mine now, and saw that it was not yet 7 o'clock. I heard a rumble of thunder, and the coachman outside uttered a curse. I had meant to think over future lessons in the carriage, to remind myself what a boy of 10 might need to learn. But every time I tried to concentrate, I thought of Richard's face, and my mind balked. It was not my fault I was returning to work so soon. Everything else aside, I needed the money. I had spent the last 4 weeks in cramped lodgings, living off the sale of a necklace Richard had given me when we were first married. Even my mourning was reused. I had been forced to make the best of the black dresses I had worn when my mother died, darning here and there, turning out a seam, unplucking tighter threads at the waist. A bad start, perhaps, for a widow, but it was not as though I had ever been a good wife.